tell us, like, for you, what does it look like for you as a CEO, as a leader, as a human, to be your best?
Yeah, that's, I believe, Seth, that we are here to live life to the highest quality that we can. Everybody is here for a reason, and the primary reason is to leave the world better than we came into it, right? The Dalai Lama says that we're all in common in the sense that we all want more happiness and less suffering.
Welcome to the Small Business Storytellers, the show where we dive deep into the stories and secrets of businesses focused on not just making money, but making the world a better place. My name is Seth Silvers, and my passion is helping businesses grow that are making the world a better place. Every episode, you will hear from transformational leaders and business owners as we dive into what has helped them grow and what has helped them stay true to themselves along the way. Also, every week we are hosting live conversations with our guests on Fireside Chat, where we give you, the audience, the opportunity to ask them your burning questions. So make sure to join us live on Fireside Chat on your mobile device. Let's dive in.
All right. Hello, 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 everybody. Hope everybody that is tuning in is doing well. My name is Seth Silvers, and this is the first episode on Fireside of the Small Business Storytellers. Today, we're going to be interviewing Ali Abuzalam. We are super stoked to be here, and this is going to be the first of many episodes of the Small Business Storytellers, where we share with you the best business stories that you've never heard. The goal of this show is to really bring you amazing stories of small business owners that are not just like fighting to survive, but are thriving. Like they're working hard to make a difference through small business. So that's going to be the focus of this show. Every single week, we'll interview two different business owners and bring them on here. And so we're just kind of getting the word out about this particular show and inviting people in. Today, I have the privilege of interviewing a good friend of mine, Ali.
Thank you, Seth. I appreciate the opportunity and excited to check this app out.
Yeah, absolutely. This is going to be great. And so this shows that we're going to be here for the next 60 minutes. So if you're listening now, you're welcome to join us for as much of that as you can. For the next 25 minutes or so, we're going to be diving into Ali's story. And we're going to be learning about how Ali is a CEO of one of the top and most innovative vaporizer companies in America, how he's an undefeated MMA fighter. And also, we're going to learn about his podcast, which I think is an amazing podcast called the On Purpose Podcast. So Ali, first off, let's dive in. Give us just like a big picture, like 60-second overview for who are you and what does your life look like right now?
Yes, my name is Ali Abuzalam. My life looks really fun and very, very inclusive of a lot of things right now. Like you said, I'm an undefeated MMA fighter, trained in MMA. I'm running my business, B Nails, in the cannabis industry, helping empower cannabis consumers to be their best. I have an amazing podcast with my partner, Jared Hardy. We just hit episode 100 today, so we're celebrating that. Apparently, only 2% of podcasts ever make it to 100 episodes, so we're really excited about that. And really doing all I can do here in Fort Collins, Colorado, my community to help empower people to be their best. And I'm sure we'll get an opportunity to get into more of exactly what that means.
Yeah, absolutely. So give us a little bit of context about your story. Did you start a cannabis company when you were 2 years old? You know, how did you get into this? Like, first, let's kind of talk about the cannabis space a little bit. And also for the listeners, I'll just let you guys know, like, I'm not a cannabis consumer, but I have so much respect for how Ali has built his company and the brand. Like you're going to talk about Be Your Best. You've really made it about more than what a lot of people think about cannabis. So give us some context for your story and how you got into the industry you're in.
Yeah, definitely. So unlike you, Seth, I am a cannabis consumer and have been for many years now. From a very young age, I always knew that I wanted to be an entrepreneur. And I went to business school, Texas Tech University, and wanted to get a job where I could make a good amount of income and become an entrepreneur. I didn't know what it was, but I knew that I loved communicating, networking, negotiating, and I wanted to do something to where I could start my own business. So I got into oil and gas, the oil and gas industry. And long story short, it was kind of right place, right time. I saw that Colorado was making history by becoming the first state to legalize recreational cannabis in 2014. And I was like, wow, you know, I want to be a part of that. It's a multi-billion dollar industry. I already love cannabis. I know that it's doing amazing things for people, but I want to learn more. So I bugged the CEO of my oil company until he was like, all right, Ali, let's move you up to Denver then from Texas, because Denver was booming with oil and gas at the time. And I was so busy with work, Seth, that I didn't really get an opportunity to do too much in the cannabis industry. I went to a couple events. One of the events that really impacted me was an organization called Grow for Vets. They gave free cannabis to cannabis veterans who were negatively impacted by the opioid crisis. You know, the VA would just prescribe these guys so many different types of opioids, and it was ruining their lives. The suicide rate is horrendous. Just horrible things come from these drugs that the VA prescribes these veterans. And I saw these tough, big men crying about how cannabis saved their life and got them off of opioids. So that was kind of the door that opened, that I was like, whoa, like cannabis is more than just something to help you de-stress or to enhance life a little bit. Like there's really something here. And I got a call from an old high school buddy of mine. He said, hey, Ali, I saw that you just moved to Denver, man. I know you're a business guy. I want your opinion on a product idea that I have. I said, okay, what is it? He said, it's a way to dab without a torch. And that's when a light bulb went off in my head, because I had seen dabbing. For those of you who don't know what that is, it's a term to describe the consumption of cannabis concentrates. And back in college at Texas Tech, I was in a fraternity there. And I remember the first time I ever saw dabbing, one of the pledges just fired up this torch and was holding it against a rig, or what some may know as a bong. And I was like, dude, what are you doing? I thought he was, you know, some sort of crackhead or something. And he's like, man, I'm just dabbing, man. This is weed. And the analogy that always stuck with me to that day was like, you know, you're smoking the beer of cannabis. This is like liquor. It's a more concentrated form. And from that moment, I was like, when someone figures out a way to consume that in a way that you don't look like a crackhead, that's going to be a big part of the industry. And sure enough, today, cannabis concentrates are the fastest growing segment in the entire industry out of the three segments: flower, edibles, and concentrates. And they're doing amazing things for people. And the technology and science is getting very exciting, because now we're figuring out ways to specifically extract certain cannabinoid and terpene profiles for the desired effect. So let's say you don't want to feel too high or intoxicated, but you may be a cancer patient going through chemo and you just want to increase your hunger, your appetite, right? There's soon going to be formulations for that. Or maybe you just want to get sometimes that laughy, uplifty, joyous feelings. There's formulations for that. So we're really getting a lot more dialed in. And it started there when my friend called me. I was like, okay, I'm interested. A way to dab without the torch. Sure enough, I went over there. He showed me what our primary product is now, called the Electric Nail, E-Nail for short. And I bought some parts for him. He built a better one, and kind of the rest is history. That's where it all started.
Yeah. I love it. And I love almost more than anything that the brand that you've built. And the brand is, it's not around consuming cannabis as you can, it's around being your best. And that's really bigger than cannabis. So can you tell us about this message that you've kind of championed over the last several years of be your best, and where did that start for you?
Yeah. So it starts with how we first started. And with this, back in 2015, when we founded, it was very exciting, right? The whole world was looking at Colorado as the mecca of the cannabis industry. It was the first recreational market, and it was a very exciting time. So our initial mission was to revolutionize the convenience of dabbing. You know, people were looking to consume cannabis concentrates, and really the primary method was with that horrendous torch. So that was our goal at first, to just provide excellent, high quality vaporizers to help you consume. And then pretty quickly there, Seth, like within 2 to 3 years, we kind of reached the pinnacle of that original mission, because I would go to trade shows and people would be like, oh, man, like, we love your products. I've had my E-Nail for 2-3 years, or my Gobi for 2-3 years. It's my favorite product. I got rid of my torch. And I love it. Like, you guys are my favorite brand, you know. And that was great. But soon after that, it was, I just felt like I wanted to do more. You know, I met a lot of people throughout the cannabis industry and just felt that we weren't doing enough. About 4 years in, 2 years ago, I just had some disagreements with my business partners. We had different visions, and I bought both of my business partners out. And since then, I transitioned the company and trademarked the tagline, Be Your Best, because I realized that through just years of trade shows, years of events, years of talking to people, that people consume cannabis to enhance their life and live the best way that they can, whether that's helping them overcome chronic pain, chronic anxiety, chronic depression, or simply just to de-stress and unwind at the end of a long day. People were really using this incredible plant to improve their life. And on top of that, it was more effective. It is more effective for millions and millions of people around the world than so many prescription drugs that so many doctors are prescribing for multiple ailments, whether that be anxiety disorders, right, depression, all these things. So I was like, wow, like there's so much more here than I originally thought. So now our mission is to empower cannabis consumers to be their best. And our mission is to continually move customers closer to fulfilling their unique purpose by not only providing excellent high quality vaporizers, but other tools, relevant education, inspirational events, and now soon to be programs that help people thrive and positively impact communities where they live and work.
I love that. I think that's huge. And I think that message, I mean, like, I've seen you around town, all like, you know, you're wearing your Be Your Best shirt. Like, it's just so evident that you carry that. And so I'd love to just know a little bit, like, for Ali, like, how are you being your best? And before you dive into that, just for those that are listening that maybe just jumped in, welcome to the Small Business Storytellers. This is our first episode of this season on Fireside. Thank you, Russ, giving the claps. And I'm interviewing Ali Abuzalam. He's a CEO. He's a fighter, which we're going to get into soon. He also has his own podcast. And so here in probably about 15, 20 minutes, we're going to start taking questions from you. And if you have questions that you want Ali to answer, go ahead and put them in the React, like put them in the chat, and we'll be looking through those. And I'll ask a couple of you to come on stage. But Ali, tell us, like, for you, what does it look like for you as a CEO, as a leader, as a human, to be your best?
Yeah, that's... I believe, Seth, that we are here to live life to the highest quality that we can. Everybody is here for a reason, and the primary reason is to leave the world better than we came into it, right? The Dalai Lama says that we're all in common in the sense that we all want more happiness and less suffering as human beings. And my duty is to first figure out how to do that for myself. And then once I figure that out for myself, how can I scale that so I can bring more happiness and less suffering to every single individual that I ever come in contact with, whether in person or digitally? So for me, I'm always looking at ways to develop myself and the people around me, whether that's my spirituality, things in my career, my health and wellness, my relationships, and my environment. So that's it. Essentially, that's kind of the summary of what, yeah, I believe it means to be my best.
Yeah. So, like, what about, like, on a day-to-day basis? Like, just walk us through some things that you do on a super practical basis each day that help you to just have an awesome day and be your best.
Yeah. So I have a pretty rigorous... I have pretty rigorous rituals. My girlfriend and I both, we wake up between 5:30 and 6 a.m. every day, begin our day with a nice 20-minute meditation. We do 10 minutes of powerful visualization and gratitude. Gratitude is something that I'm a huge advocate of. Here in Fort Collins, actually, a good business partner of mine, TJ Grissell, and I started a movement called DAT GRAT, Daily Action Towards Gratitude. And for about a year and a half up until COVID, we interviewed people on the streets in Fort Collins, just approached them with Instagram Live going on our phones and asked them about gratitude and what they believe that is, because that's been a huge, huge tool, really the foundation of keeping a positive mindset and being able to execute at a high level is just, first of all, being grateful for all the blessings that I already have. And in that, I realized that being in that state of gratitude brings even more blessings for me to count. So visualization, the gratitude, some yoga in the morning, then we get off to work. Being my best with my colony, I have the Be Your Best show where I interview somebody each week about how they use cannabis to be their best. So that's where I've collected a lot of data from so many different types of people, different ages, races, cultures, about how they use cannabis to be their best. And then MMA is huge. There's so much in martial arts, from discipline, focus, grit, accountability, so much that goes into martial arts that applies to life. That's been a huge part of my life and helping me be my best too. So with of course, in the spiritual realm, meditation, prayer, and gratitude practice have been huge for me, especially in today's day and age. Like, you know, we're on this new app. We have Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. I mean, we have so many things and technology and distractions going on. The average person thinks 60,000 thoughts a day.
Yeah,
so to take a small moment, it's insane. And I mean, if you don't have your notifications off on your phone, which I highly recommend, ding, 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 you know, you're being pulled in different directions. There's so much stimulus today. Our attention span is shorter than ever. To be able to take just a few moments, or even just one moment a day, to really calm the mind and try and clear the mind has been huge. Meditation. I've been developing for a few years, but really this last year been getting deep into it. That's kind of a quick run through of a day in the life of Ali.
Yeah, I love that. I just had a meeting today with the person that I go and see as a counselor. I was talking to him about like how there's these things, whether it's running or meditation or reading, that always seem to like recalibrate me. Like they're always like, if I'm overwhelmed or stressed, they always like bring me back. And we were talking about like why we should just plan those things into our day, no matter what we're doing. Like, but I think especially if you're in a position like a CEO where we're building companies and like we have a lot on our plate each day. And he said, he's like, why don't you just build it into your day before the emergency happens? Like, why wait until you're in crisis and you need to like calm down? Like, why not just have these patterns just be a part of your day? Have you seen your own life kind of like go through some transformation just as you've been a little bit more rigorous about some of these rhythms?
Oh, huge transformations. I mean, it's been night and day. I feel like just a couple of years ago, my life felt like an air raid every day. Like I wake up and I was always a little bit behind schedule and just imposing the stress on myself of feeling that I had to do so much for work or whatever that it is going on in my life at the time, that I wouldn't create that space in the mornings like I do now. And speaking of rituals, I have to say I hesitated a little bit on sharing this one, just because it's about my first thing that I do in the morning, which is actually my morning poop. And this is a big one, that I don't look at my phone until I've read 10 pages while I take my morning poop. That's a big life hack right there. I thought I should share.
So you mentioned fighting. How in the world did you go from like being a CEO of a fast growing company to like, how'd you get into MMA fighting?
I think I was like born with just fighter blood in me or something. Cause even as a little kid, my parents would tell me that I would always try and wrestle my little cousins as a 2-year-old. By the time I was 5 and 6, my favorite things were all fighting oriented: Street Fighter, WCW, WWF. I went to those things and watched my favorite wrestlers. I would passionately cry when my wrestlers lost. Like when Stone Cold Steve Austin would beat The Rock, I would just be screaming and be like, I hate Stone Cold, like, why? And just cry. I was so passionate about it all the time. Or Bret Hart, whenever Bret Hart lost, it would piss me off so badly. Mortal Kombat, so many things. And then, you know, I took some as a young boy. And when I got to high school, wrestling was kind of the real activity that opened up that world for me. So I wrestled all through high school, a little bit in college. And after I graduated college, I didn't do much, but I'm a big goal setter. I have an ongoing list of 101 life goals. And one of the goals I wrote on there was win an MMA fight by 2019 or before. So when I moved to Colorado, or Fort Collins specifically, in 2016, I was taking a look at that list and I was like, ooh, that's a big goal there. I should probably join a gym and start training. So I joined Trials MMA and I was kind of looking for something. I had done, I was just kind of going to the gym and lifting weights, and I've always been an active guy, but I decided, all right, I'm going to start training jiu-jitsu, and that'll eventually lead to the MMA stuff. And I joined Trials MMA. Amazing gym, a great mix of family culture as well as fight culture there. We have some incredible fighters, professional fighters, amateur fighters, and an amazing head coach who's a former MMA world champion. And then just the entire coaching staff there is incredible. So I quickly found my tribe, that I like to say, my Trials tribe. And it was really inspiring to see teammates go out and fight. So within about, I think it was like 3 years training, I was like, you know, I'm going to thoroughly train before I fight, because I'm not, you know, I'm going to go out there being thoroughly trained. I'm trying to get my ass kicked out there. So
you were training for 3 years before you
fought? Before I did a debut MMA fight. Yeah, I did a bunch of jiu-jitsu tournaments and a Muay Thai fight. But before I stepped into the MMA cage, I trained for 3 years. Yep.
That's wild. And you've had 2 fights. How have they gone?
They've gone great. My first one was a first round ground and pound TKO. And then my second one, the guy was really tough, jiu-jitsu black belt. Or I'm sorry, judo black belt, jiu-jitsu blue belt. And but we went to the third round and I got the doctor stoppage. Doctor stopped the fight because his nose was just bleeding profusely.
So yeah, what's next with him? Go and keep fighting. Are you gonna call out Connor Khabib soon?
No way would I ever call out either one of those guys anytime soon, at least. But I love the sport, Seth. And what's interesting is I wasn't sure where I wanted to go with this. Like, oh, should I try to, you know, go pro? And I wanted to put a goal on it, but I finally, after my first fight, decided that all I'm trying to do is be my best, be the best martial artist I can be. And if that takes me to the UFC, badass. If that means, you know, I do a couple more fights and then just decide I'm just going to be training, then that's badass too, because I'll be training until I'm in my 60s. I'll be rolling around in the gi, I'm sure.
Right. Yeah, I love it. So what have you learned about being a better CEO from fighting?
That's a great question. What have I learned about being a better CEO from fighting? Well, one thing I think that you can translate from fighting to life is that life goes on no matter what happens. You know, you could get knocked out. You can get submitted. The pressure can be unbelievable of knowing you're about to step in a cage with somebody who's really trying to hurt you, who's trying to knock you out, who's trying to choke you out. And that type of anxiety and pressure, I think is incredible training for business, because there can be some really high stress things that happen in running your business, but it's pretty rare that you're going to come across any business problems that
that are going to give you that same type of anxiety and pressure of, you know, right before you, you step into a cage. Another thing too is, is the team aspect. You know, you're going in there by yourself, but it takes a tribe. It takes a team to really get you to where you need to be before you take on a fight. And I think the same thing goes for your business, whether that's your employees, your strategic partners, who you're hiring. I mean, anything that you're trying to build in life, you can't do it by yourself. You need to make sure that you're finding people who share that passion and vision.
Yeah. I think that's so true. I mean, it is a fight. Like, you don't build businesses. It's not an easy thing to do. And so I think that that's super, super value in it. But Ali, tell us about your podcast as we kind of transition to Q&A. Tell us about the On Purpose podcast and what was kind of your vision behind getting that up and off the ground.
Yeah, well, first of all, I'll have to share that it wasn't my vision at all. It was actually my co-host's vision, Jared Hardy, who we've really had the opportunity to develop a unique relationship because he's one of my coaches. He's one of the owners of Trials MMA and has a totally different background than I do. He's a 21-year retired police officer. He runs law enforcement programs around the country. He's an author and he's never smoked cannabis in his life. So pretty opposite end of the spectrum for me, but he actually invited me after I joined Trials. He invited me to this mastermind group that he had and saw something in me to where he thought it would be a good idea for us to start a podcast together. So he invited me to lunch one day and pitched me on the idea and said, "Hey, you know, I think that we both have a lot of passion and a desire to uplift people in our community to do what we can to empower others. And I think that we come from very different backgrounds and have different ideologies to where we could reach more people by teaming up because of how different we are. And I think we should start a podcast." So I was like, "All right, coach, let's do it." And
love it. Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah. And like I shared earlier, this today we released episode 100. So that was almost exactly 2 years ago. And it's been a really, really fun journey.
And props to that. And that you guys have posted weekly for the last 2 years, right?
Yep. Every week.
Yeah, which is amazing. And like people and other podcasters hearing in the room, like that's so hard to do. It's so much harder than you think. And so I think it's amazing that you guys have done that. We have Russ on stage now. So Russ, are there any questions that you have for my man Ali?
Yeah. Hey Seth, thanks for calling me up. Great interview. Really enjoyed this. Ali, I'm just south of you in the Denver area. So, yay, Colorado, really cool story. Really into the, you know, I'm a, outdoors podcast, you know, I podcast about the outdoors and, just cool to hear your MMA, you know, history. I'm wondering, you know, on the, you know, pot, the stigma, you know, is, you know, do you deal with that a lot? Is that something are you always having to kind of defend the industry you're in or are the people you're, you know, partnering with, are they all part of the industry already and kind of drinking the Kool-Aid? And then secondly, you know, how does it pot help you, you know, live your best life? Like how does it, particularly with the MMA stuff, I'm just wondering, is it a recovery thing for you or more than that?
Yeah. Well, thanks for joining us, Russ. And with you just being south, maybe we'll get to link up at some point. But yeah, to answer your first question, I really haven't had a lot of resistance or hate of any kind towards the cannabis industry. I will admit when I first started, I was petrified of sharing anything about me being involved in the cannabis industry because I came from the very conservative Texas oil and gas industry. And also my dad's side of the family is Muslim and my mom's side of the family is Catholic. So I was like, as conservative as you could get, or at least surrounded by very conservative groups for a while there. So I actually didn't share anything
publicly about me consuming cannabis or about my business until we were like a year and a half in, because my fear was that, well, maybe it won't work out and then I'll need to go try and get another oil and gas job, and then they're going to be like, no, because you use weed or whatever it is. But since then, I think that there's so much support behind the cannabis industry today that it's really rare that I get any negative comments from people, thankfully. And then as far as for me, the way that I use cannabis to be my best, definitely recovery. Sometimes it's sometimes for sleep, and then frankly for stress and pleasure enhancement, so I'm not a big drinker, so I'm not, not really having the glass of wine at the end of a long day or anything like that. For me, I'd prefer a nice smoke, but it's definitely not something that I'm looking to make a constant in my life. I think when I first started B Nails, it was definitely more of a continuous thing, but just like anything, you have to moderate it, cannabis. And that's a lot of what we talk about on the Be Your Best show. It affects everyone differently. And it's very important to have intention when you're using the plant, because just like with anything, with not moderating it, sometimes it can get out of control.
Ali, you said you have a page of 100 goals. I want to know some more of those.
I have a note thing on my phone that's 101 life goals. And honestly, it's not full. It's not 101. It's just something that I kind of continuously add to.
Yeah. Yeah. What are some of the more some of the more strange ones on there?
Strange ones on there?
Like that other people that probably are not on other people's goal list. I'll put that.
Let's see. Live with monks for 1 month.
Okay.
Win a salsa dancing competition.
Okay.
Yeah, so I got some interesting ones on here. Drill an oil well. I probably don't need to do that, but that must have been on there from my oil days. But yeah, there's definitely some interesting ones on here.
Yeah, totally. That's awesome. What have been, reflecting on episode 100 of the podcast, I know right now we have a lot of podcasters and a lot of show creators in the space. So like right now, you just hit episode 100. What have been some things that you've learned just about the podcasting space and like growing your podcast?
I've learned that podcasting is very similar to life, that when you bring on guests, it's an opportunity to merge not only ideas, but communities. All of our guest episodes have been our best performing episodes, and it kind of unlocks new opportunities when you bring on a guest. Because Jared and I, we've definitely done the majority of our episodes, just him and I. We wanted to, I think we did at least 50 before we ever brought a guest one. And it was really exciting once we started to bring on guests, because it just gave us the chance to interact and access totally different communities that were already aligned with the guests we would bring on.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. It's I think it's hard to do episodes just you and one other person. So I think that's awesome. You guys made it to 50. I want to pass it off to Kelly. Kelly just joined, and I know she has a question related to the cannabis side of things.
I do. Yeah. Hi, thanks. I was just wondering, I live in Illinois, and the state passed legalization of cannabis like 2 years ago. So last year was like our first, full year with legalized cannabis in the state. And I know in December, the House, the federal House passed, like they tried to pass a decriminalization federal bill, but it was, I think it was kind of like a joke. Everybody was like, oh, here you go. So I'm just wondering, like, how involved, cannabis business owners, like across the nation, because several states now have decriminalized it on the state level, like how involved are you, or what kind of steps do you take to federally, like to move it through to be federally decriminalized? And like, what would that do for your business if it was decriminalized federally?
Yeah, great question, Kelly. You know, I personally and my business don't have a lot of direct involvement with helping push the agenda to decriminalize. I always say that on the Be Your Best show that us sharing stories like the ones that I hear on the show every week are helping push the needle towards federal decriminalization. We are a member of the NCIA, National Cannabis Industry Association. So we get, you know, invites to what are now all the digital events, and they keep us updated on their on all of their advocacies. But as far as direct involvement, besides just sponsoring some of the efforts from the NCIA, not too much. As far as what it would do for our business, it would be huge. You know, I think that's a big fear of a lot of people who are interested in cannabis. We're seeing a new customer segment emerge that we like to call CBD curious. People who are really CBD kind of seems to be a safer, more comfortable step into the cannabis realm, especially for people who are tobacco or nicotine users. A lot of people like tobacco and nicotine just for the action of smoking. And we're seeing a lot of people transition to hemp-based extracts instead of tobacco and nicotine. And then again, like I was mentioning earlier, a lot of people are finding out that cannabis can help so many different ailments, and hey, maybe get them off their painkillers or their anxiety meds or their opiates. So decriminalizing that, I think, would open a lot more doors for people to try those, especially people who work for large companies or corporations that are subject to cannabis drug tests.
Yeah, great. Thanks. That makes a lot of sense. I actually, it's interesting that you say that. When I told my doctor once when they were talking about what kind of things you take, and I said, I take CBD. And she was like, why do you take that? I said, you know, just for anxiety, and it helps me sleep and that. And she actually was like, oh, well, you know, why don't I prescribe you this anti-anxiety drug as well? You know, and I was like, well, I mean, the CBD works. I don't really need it. So it's interesting that you say that. Like, it's almost a, you know, like, is there a fight between the, you know, the medical industry and that? But I guess that's a topic for a different podcast that I will be happily tuning into. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you. And I will tell you that it is. There is definitely a fight. Big Pharma definitely wants to get their meat hooks into the industry, and that's a part of the reason why there's a holdup for federal legalization, because they would be losing a lot of money if everyone just stops taking all their medications and switches to CBD and marijuana.
Yeah, that's interesting too, Kelly, what you mentioned, because, you know, I have a marketing agency in Colorado, and we've worked with a handful of CBD companies. And I mean, part of it's just education. I did not know, like, CBD does not, like, it doesn't have THC in it. You don't get high from CBD. It's truly like a natural, I mean, it's just like a natural oil. It's not much different than like essential oils from Young Living. But because of the stigma, and because a lot of people don't like know about it, they, you know, there's all of this crazy stigma around it, to where it's like, oh no, you should probably take some pills that have a bunch of chemicals instead of that. So I think that's really interesting that you had that experience with Dr. Kelly.
Yeah, it was interesting. And in the anti-anxiety medication she prescribed me is actually an antihistamine. And like, the side effect is that it boosts serotonin. So that's the side effect. But the other side effect is like, it completely like gives you dry mouth, dries out your eyes. Like, you know, you feel like you're on an antihistamine, where with the CBD, it, you know, maybe the side effect was, oh, maybe, you know, there's a little sugar in the gummy or whatever. So I have not found it as successful as the CBD, I guess, is what I'm saying. But that, I mean, I guess that brings up another topic of, you know, how regulated is the CBD, the edible industry, like that? Because I've heard lots of things of like, there's not as much CBD in that is advertised in products as it says. So like, how do you really know that you're getting as much as you should be getting. And like, you know, so that I think that's something that I struggle with now. I think I found a good product that I like, but then I'm like, oh, is it really as good as it says they are? So I guess that would be another question, is how regulated are these products? Like, how do you make sure you're doing quality control? Sorry, I'm asking a lot of questions. I think it's super interesting. So.
Yeah, great question, Kelly. And I'm glad you're asking these, because these are important questions to ask. And a lot of companies, CBD companies, the industry is getting more and more regulated as it progresses. And I think that's a really good thing. And a lot of CBD companies now actually have specific lab reports. Like we actually have a CBD shatter that you can vaporize and inhale that gives immediate relief because it's going through the lungs. And we have a QR code on the bottom of our jar that you scan, and it gives you the exact lab report from a third party company that shows the amount of CBD and other cannabinoids, or maybe some other cannabinoids that are in there as well. And then most importantly, has to show that, hey, the THC percentage is either absolutely zero, depending on the type of product, or some products can legally have up to 0.03% THC. So that I would recommend moving forward, that if you're going to switch brands, or even with your current brand, you can request some of their lab reports if they don't already have that on their website or on the actual products themselves.
Yeah, I think that's a good recommendation. And I probably should have made some kind of disclaimer this episode, but obviously, you know, a disclaimer of follow your local, like follow whatever laws and regulations there are in your local community. You know, we don't want anybody to be, you know, intentionally going around those. But also, I think so much of this conversation, you just got to educate yourself. Like, you got to be educated about what's going on. I've found from a marketing perspective that it's really interesting, the problems you have, Ali, where like you can't do Facebook ads, you can't do Google ads. And so I'm curious to hear, like, what are some, how have you grown your company when, like, you know, legally, like Facebook ads, Google ads, like they're not going to let a cannabis company run advertisements. And so it's all had to be organic. Like, what has marketing looked like for you when you don't have access to those traditional models?
Well, one way is having awesome people like you in my network to give me opportunities like this. So thank you, Seth.
There we go.
But we're primarily e-commerce. So SEO is huge for us. Aside from that, influencer marketing has been really big. We sponsor influencers' products or pay them to make a video that they can put on YouTube, Instagram, Snapchat, now even some TikTok. And events were really huge for us pre-COVID, the trade shows, especially for the wholesale business.
Right.
Trade shows where we would have the opportunity to interact with thousands of people over the course of a few days were really big. And recently we've really been bolstering up our sales, because unlike marijuana companies, since we're hardware, we can distribute all around the world, you know, to smoke and vape shops anywhere in the world. So we've especially last year and this year, have really been putting a lot more resources into our B2B sales program. But as far as retail, SEO, influencer marketing, and then social media for us, you know, podcasts, our social platforms, and all the above.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, how's kind of this year been for you? Like, COVID with it impacting businesses in so many different ways. You guys primarily being e-commerce, did you see a hit come, or did you see an increase, or what did it look like for you?
Our wholesale business did take a hit there for a while. When COVID first started, it's funny, we actually had surges on the days where people were getting their first stimulus check. We had a surge in sales. And when COVID first started, we had a little surge in sales. But then 2020 became pretty slow, pretty slow for us. It was one of our slowest years since we founded. But 2021, for whatever reason, has gotten off to a strong start. So we're really excited to see where this year takes us.
Cool. Yeah, that's awesome. Thank you, everybody, for listening. And if you have not heard anything about Ali Abuzalam, he's the CEO of B-Nails and also the co-host of the On Purpose podcast. And he's an undefeated MMA fighter. So, Ali, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate the opportunity. And thank you, Stephanie, Kelly, everyone who asked questions, and looking forward to more. Thank you, guys.
Yeah, absolutely. Everybody go follow Ali, give him some love, and we'll see you in some other fireside rooms here later.
Thank you so much for listening to the Small Business Storytellers. If you've wanted to start a podcast and have been wondering if you can use podcasting to grow your business, but don't know where to start, I'd love to talk. Head to successwithstories.com/podcast to learn exactly how to launch, grow, and profit from a podcast for your business. Again, that is successwithstories.com/podcast. Thank you so much for listening. And if you like this episode, share it with someone you know who would also like it. If you want to be a guest on the podcast or know someone who would be a great guest on the show, let me know. Thank you. And we will see you next time on the Small Business Storytellers.